Maggie had no lust for gambling, none whatsoever. She merely wanted to taste the fury of her relationship with the swine Sicilian, her need for solidity in a life built on the edge of the slide area, the senselessness of being here in Las Vegas when she could be back in Beverly Hills. She grew angrier and more ill at the thought of Nuncio upstairs in the room taking another shower. She bathed 3 times a day, but it was different with him. He knew she resented his smell. He had the soft odor of wet fur sometimes, and she had told him about it. Now he bathed constantly and hated it. He was a foreigner to the bath. His life had been marked by various kinds of filths, and baths for him now were more of an obscenity than dirt could ever have been. For her, bathing was different. It was a necessity. She had to keep the patina of the world off her, had to remain clean and smooth and white. A presentation, not an object of flesh and hair. A chromium instrument, something never pitted by rust and corrosion. When she was touched by them, by any one of them, by the men, by all the nuncios, they left little pit holes of bloody rust on her white permanent flesh, cobwebs, sooty stains. She had to bathe, often. She strolled down between the tables and the slots, carrying $816, 8 $100 bills and $16 in ones. At the change booth, she got cartwheels for the 16 ones. The chief waited. It was her baby. She played it to infuriate the Sicilian. He had told her to play the nickel slots, the quarter or dime slots, but she always infuriated him by blowing $50 or $100 in 10 minutes, one coin after another, in the big chief. She faced the machine squarely and put in the first silver dollar. She pulled the handle, that swine, Nuncio. Another dollar, pulled the handle. How long does this go on? The reels cycled and spun and whirled and whipped in a blurring spinning metal humming over and over and over as Maggie blue-eyed, Maggie hated and hated and thought of hate and all the days and nights of swine behind her and ahead of her. And if only she had all the money in this room, in this casino, in this hotel, in this town, right now, this very instant, just an instant, this instant, it would be enough to whirring and humming and spinning and over and over and over and over and over, and she would be free, free, free. And all the world would never touch her body again. The swine would never touch her white flesh again. And then suddenly, as dollar after dollar after dollar went around, 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 humming in reels of cherries and bells and bars and plums and oranges, there was suddenly pain, 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 a sharp pain, pain, pain in her chest, her heart. Her center, a needle, a lancet, a burning, a pillar of flame that was purest, pure, purer pain. Maggie, pretty Maggie Money Eyes, who wanted all that money in that cartwheel chief slot machine. Maggie, who had come from filth and rheumatic fever, who had come all the way to 3 baths a day and a specialist in very expensive Beverly Hills. That Maggie suddenly had a seizure, a flutter, a slam of a coronary thrombosis, and fell instantly dead on the floor of the casino. Dead. One instant, she had been holding the handle of the slot machine, willing her entire being, all that hatred for all the swine she had ever rolled with, willing every fiber of every cell of every chromosome into that machine, wanting to suck out every silver vapor within its belly, and the next instant, so close, they might have been the same, her heart exploded and killed her, and she slipped to the floor, still touching the chief. On the floor, dead, struck dead, liar. All the lies that were her life. Dead on a floor. a moment out of time. Lights whirling and spinning in a cotton candy universe. Down a bottomless funnel, roundly sectioned like a goat's horn. A cornucopia that rose up, cuculiform, smooth and slick as a worm belly. Endless nights that pealed ebony funeral bells. Out of fog, out of weightlessness. Suddenly total cellular knowledge. Memory running backward. Gibbering, spastic blindness. A soundless owl of frenzy trapped in a cave of prisms. Sand endlessly draining down. Billows of forever. Edges of the world as they splintered. Foam rising, drowning from inside. The smell of rust. Rough green corners that burn. Memory, the gibbering, spastic, blind memory. Seven rushing vacuums of nothing. Yellow. Pinpoints cast in amber, straining and elongating, running like live wax. Chill fevers. Overhead, the odor of stop. This is the stopover before hell or heaven. This is limbo. Trapped and doomed alone in a mist-eaten nowhere. A soundless screaming, a soundless whirring, a soundless spinning, 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 spinning. Maggie had wanted all the silver in the machine. She had died, willing herself into the machine. Now, looking out from within, from inside the limbo that had become her own purgatory, Maggie was trapped in the oiled and anodized interior of the silver dollar slot machine. The prison of her final desires, where she had wanted to be, completely trapped in that last instant of life between life, death. Maggie, gone inside, all soul now, trapped for all eternity in the cage soul of the soulless machine. Limbo. Trapped. Trapped.
I hope you don't mind if I call over one of the slot men, the slot machine floor manager was saying from a far distance. He was in his late 50s, a velvet-voiced man whose eyes held nothing of light and certainly nothing of kindness. He had stopped the pit boss as the stocky man had turned in mid-step to return to Costner and the jackpotted machine. He had taken the walk himself.
"We have to make sure, you know how it is. Somebody didn't fool with the slot, you know, maybe it's out of whack or something, you know."
He lifted his left hand, and there was a clicker in it, the kind children use at Halloween. He clicked half a dozen times like a rabid cricket, and there was a scurrying in the pit between the tables. Costner was only faintly aware of what was happening. Instead of being totally awake, feeling the surge of adrenaline through his veins, the feeling any gambler gets when he is ahead of the game, a kind of desperate urgency when he has hit it for a boodle, he was numb, partaking of the action around him only as much as a drinking glass involves itself in the alcoholic's drunken binge. All color and sound had been leached out of him. A tired-looking, resigned, weary man, wearing a gray porter's jacket, as gray as his hair, as gray as his indoor skin, came to them, carrying a leather wrap-up of tools. The slot repairman studied the machine, turning the pressed steel body around on its stand, studying the back. He used a key on the back door, and for an instant Costner had a view of gears, springs, armatures, and the clock that ran the slot mechanism. The repairman nodded silently over it, closed and relocked it, turned it around again, and studied the face of the machine.
"Nobody's been spooning it," he said, and went away.
Costner stared at the floor manager.
"Gaffing, that's what he meant. Spooning's another word for it. Some guys use a little piece of plastic or a wire, shove it down through the escalator, it kicks the machine. Nobody thought that's what happened here, but, you know, we have to make sure. $2,000 is a big payoff, and twice, well, you know, I'm sure you'll understand. If a guy was doing it with a boomerang..."
Costner raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, a boomerang. It's another way to spoon the machine, but we just wanted to make a little check, and now everybody's satisfied, so if you'll just come back to the casino cashier with me.
And they paid him off again. So he went back to the slot machine and stood before it for a long time, staring at it. The change girls and the dealers going off duty, the little old ladies with their canvas work gloves worn to avoid calluses when pulling the slot handles, the men's room attendant on his way up front to get more matchbooks, the floral tourists, the idle observers, the hard drinkers, the sweepers, the busboys, the gamblers with poached egg eyes who had been up all night, the showgirls with massive breasts and diminutive sugar daddies, all of them conjectured mentally about the beat-up walker who was staring at the silver dollar chief. He didn't move, merely stared at the machine. And they wondered. The machine was staring back at Costner. Three blue eyes. The electric current had sparked through him again as the machine had clocked down and the eyes turned up a second time, as he had won a second time. But this time he knew there was something more than luck involved, for no one else had seen those three blue eyes. So now he stood before the machine, waiting. It spoke to him. Inside his skull, where no one had ever lived but himself, now someone else moved and spoke to him. A girl, a beautiful girl. Her name was Maggie, and she spoke to him. "I've been waiting for you. A long time. I've been waiting for you, Costner. Why do you think you hit the jackpot? Because I've been waiting for you, and I want you. You'll win all the jackpots. Because I want you. I need you. Love me. I'm Maggie. I'm so alone. Love me."
Costner had been staring at the slot machine for a very long time, and his weary brown eyes had seemed to be locked to the blue eyes on the jackpot bars, but he knew no one else could see the blue eyes, and no one else could hear the voice, and no one else knew about Maggie. He was the universe to her. Everything to her. He thumbed in another silver dollar, and the pit boss watched, the slot machine repairman watched, the slot machine floor manager watched, three change girls watched, and a pack of unidentified players watched, some from their seats. The reels whirled, the handle snapped back, and in a second they flipped down to a halt. 20 silver dollars tokened themselves into the payoff trough, and a woman at one of the crap tables belched a fragment of hysterical laughter. And the gong went insane again. The floor manager came over and said very softly, "Mr. Costner, it'll take us about 15 minutes to pull this machine and check it out. I'm sure you understand." As two slot repairmen came out of the back, hauled the chief off its stand, and took it into the repair room at the rear of the casino. While they waited, the floor manager regaled Costner with stories of spooners who had used intricate magnets inside their clothes, of boomerang men who had attached their plastic implements under their sleeves so they could be extended on spring-loaded clips, of cheaters who had come equipped with tiny electric drills in their hands and wires that slipped into the tiny drilled holes, and he kept saying he knew Costner would understand. But Costner knew the floor manager would not understand. When they brought the chief back, one of the repairmen nodded assuredly.
"Nothing wrong with it. Works perfectly. Nobody's been booming it."
But the blue eyes were gone on the jackpot bars. Costner knew they would return. They paid him off again. He returned and played again. And again, and again, they put a spotter on him. He won again, and again, and again. The crowd had grown to massive proportions. Word had spread like the silent communications of the telegraph vine, up and down the strip, all the way to downtown Vegas, and the sidewalk casinos where they played night and day every day of the year, and the crowd surged in a tide toward the hotel and the casino and the seedy-looking walker with his weary brown eyes. The crowd moved to him inexorably, drawn like lemmings by the odor of the luck that rose from him like musky electrical cracklings, and he won again and again, $38,000. And the three blue eyes continued to stare up at him. Her lover was winning, Maggie and her money eyes. Finally, the casino decided to speak to Costner. They pulled the chief for 15 minutes for a supplemental check by experts from the slot machine company in downtown Vegas, and while they were checking it, they asked Costner to come to the main office of the hotel. The owner was there. His face seemed faintly familiar to Costner. Had he seen it on television? The newspapers?
Mr. Costner, my name is Jules Hartshorn.
I'm pleased to meet you.
Quite a string of luck you're having out there.
It's been a long time coming.
You realize this sort of luck is impossible.
I'm compelled to believe it, Mr. Hartshorn.
As am I. It's happening to my casino. But we're thoroughly convinced of one of two possibilities, Mr. Costner. One, either the machine is inoperable in a way we can't detect, or two, you are the cleverest spooner we've ever had in here.
I'm not cheating.
As you can see, Mr. Costner, I'm smiling. The reason I'm smiling is at your naivete in believing I would take your word for it. I'm perfectly happy to nod politely and say, of course, you aren't cheating, but no one can win $38,000 on 19 straight jackpots off one slot machine. It doesn't even have mathematical odds against its happening, Mr. Costner. It's on a cosmic scale of improbability, with three dark planets crashing into our sun within the next 20 minutes. It's on a par with the Pentagon, the Forbidden City, and the Kremlin, all three pushing the red button at the same microsecond. It's an impossibility, Mr. Costner, an impossibility that's happening to me.
I'm sorry.
Not really.
No, not really. I can use the money.
For what exactly, Mr. Costner?
I hadn't thought about it, really.
I see. Well, Mr. Costner, let's look at it this way. I can't stop you from playing, and if you continue to win, I'll be required to pay off. And no stubble-chinned thugs will be waiting in an alley to jackroll you and take the money. The checks will be honored. The best I can hope for, Mr. Costner, is the attendant publicity. Right now, every high roller in Vegas is in that casino waiting for you to drop cartwheels into that machine. It won't make up for what I'm losing if you continue the way you've been, but it'll help. Every sucker in town likes to rub up next to luck. All I ask is that you cooperate a little.
The least I can do, considering your generosity.
An attempt at humor.
I'm sorry. What is it you'd like me to do?
Get about 10 hours sleep.
While you pull the slot and have it worked over thoroughly?
Yes.
If I wanted to keep winning, that might be a pretty stupid move on my part. You might change the thingamajig inside so I couldn't win if I put back every dollar of that 38 grand. We're licensed by the state of Nevada, Mr. Costner. I come from a good family, too, and take a look at me. I'm a bum with $38,000 in my pocket.
Nothing will be done to that slot machine, Costner.
Then why pull it for 10 hours?
To work it over thoroughly in the shop. If something as undetectable as metal fatigue or a worn escalator tooth or... We want to make sure this doesn't happen with other machines, and the extra time will get the word around town. We can use the crowd. Some of those tourists will stick to our fingers, and it'll help defray the expense of having you break the bank at this casino on a slot machine.
I'll have to take your word.
This hotel will be in business long after you're gone, Costner.
Not if I keep winning.
Hartshorn's smile was a stricture.
A good point.
So it isn't much of an argument. It's the only one I have. If you want to get back out on that floor, I can't stop you. No mafia hoods. Ventilate me later.
I beg your pardon?
I said no mafia. You have a picturesque manner of speaking. In point of fact, I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
I'm sure you haven't.
You've got to stop reading the National Enquirer. This is a legally run business. I'm merely asking a favor.
Okay, Mr. Hartshorn. I've been 3 days without any sleep. 10 hours will do me a world of good.
I'll have the desk clerk find you a quiet room on the top floor. And thank you, Mr. Costner.
Think nothing of it.
I'm afraid that will be impossible.
A lot of impossible things are happening lately.
He turned to go as Hartshorn lit a cigarette. Oh, by the way, Mr. Costner.
Costner stopped and half turned. Yes?
His eyes were getting difficult to focus. There was a ringing in his ears. Hartshorn seemed to waver at the edge of his vision like heat lightning across a prairie, like memories of things Costner had come across the country to forget, like the whimpering and pleading that kept tugging at the cells of his brain, the voice of Maggie still back in there saying things.
They'll try to keep you from me.
All he could think about was the 10 hours of sleep he had been promised. Suddenly, it was more important than money, than forgetting, than anything. Hartshorn was talking, was saying things, but Costner couldn't hear him. It was as if he had turned off the sound and saw only the silent, rubbery movement of Hartshorn's lips. He shook his head, trying to clear it. There were half a dozen Hartshorns, all melting into and out of one another, and the voice of Maggie.
I'm warm here and alone. I could be good to you if you can come to me. Please come. Please hurry.
Mr. Costner? Hartshorn's voice came draining down through exhaustion as thick as velvet flocking. Costner tried to focus again. His extremely weary brown eyes began to track.
Did you know about that slot machine?
Hartshorn was saying. A peculiar thing happened with it about 6 weeks ago.
What was that?
A girl died playing it. She had a heart attack, a seizure, while she was pulling the handle and died right out there on the floor.
Costner was silent for a moment. He wanted desperately to ask Hartshorn what color the dead girl's eyes had been, but he was afraid the owner would say blue.
He paused with his hand on the office door.
Seems as though you've had nothing but a streak of bad luck on that machine.
Hartshorn smiled an enigmatic smile.
It might not change for a while, either.
Costner felt his jaw muscles tighten.
Meaning I might die too, and wouldn't that be bad luck?
Hartshorn's smile became hieroglyphic, permanent, stamped on him forever.
Sleep tight, Mr. Costner. In a dream, she came to him. Long, smooth thighs and soft golden down on her arms. Blue eyes deep as the past, misted with a fine scintillance like lavender spiderwebs. Taut body that was the only body woman had ever had from the very first. Maggie came to him. Hello. I've been traveling a long time.
Who are you? Costner asked, wonderingly. He was standing on a chilly plain, or was it a plateau? The wind curled around them both, or was it only around him? She was exquisite, and he saw her clearly, or was it through a mist? Her voice was deep and resonant, or was it light and warm as night-blooming jasmine?
I'm Maggie. I love you. I've waited for you.
You have blue eyes.
Yes.
With love. You're very beautiful.
Thank you.
With female amusement.
But Why me? Why let it happen to me? Are you the girl? Are you the one that was sick? The one who... I'm Maggie. And you, I picked you because you need me. You've needed someone for a long, long time. Then it unrolled for Costner. The past unrolled and he saw who he was. He saw himself alone, always alone, as a child born to kind and warm parents who hadn't the vaguest notion of who he was, what he wanted to be, where his talents lay. So he had run off when he was in his teens, and alone, always alone on the road, for years and months and days and hours with no one. Casual friendships based on food or sex or artificial similarities, but no one to whom he could cleave and cling and belong. It was that way till Susie, and with her he had found light. He had discovered the scents and aromas of a spring that was eternally one day away. He had laughed, really laughed, and known with her it would at last be all right. So he had poured all of himself into her, giving her everything, all his hopes, his secret thoughts, his tender dreams, and she had taken them, taken him, all of him. And he had known, for the first time, what it was to have a place to live, to have a home in someone's heart. It was all the silly and gentle things he laughed at in other people, but for him it was breathing deeply of wonder. He had stayed with her for a long time and had supported her son from the first marriage, the marriage Susie never talked about, and then one day he had come back, as Susie had always known he would. He was a dark creature of ruthless habits and vicious nature, but she had been his woman all along, and Costner realized. He had been used as a stopgap, as a bill payer, till her wandering terror came home to nest. Then she had asked him to leave. Broke and tapped out in all the silent inner ways a man can be drained, he had left without even a fight, for all the fight had been leached out of him. He had left and wandered west and finally come to Las Vegas, where he had hit bottom, and found Maggie. In a dream, with blue eyes, he had found Maggie. I want you to belong to me. I love you. Her truth was vibrant in Costner's mind. She was his. At last, someone who was special was his. Can I trust you? I've never been able to trust anyone before. Women, never, but I need someone. I really need someone.
It's me. Always. Forever. You can trust me.
And she came to him, fully. Her body was a declaration of truth and trust, such as no other Costner had ever known before. She met him on a windswept plane of thought, and he made love to her more completely than he had known any passion before. She joined with him, entered him, mingled with his blood and his thought and his frustration, and he came away clean, filled with glory.
Yes, I can trust you. I want you. I'm yours, he whispered to her, when they lay side by side in a dream nowhere of mist and soundlessness. I'm yours.
She smiled, a woman's smile of belief in her man, a smile of trust and deliverance. And Costner woke up.
The chief was back on its stand, and the crowd had been penned back by velvet ropes. Several people had played the machine, but there had been no jackpots. Now Costner came into the casino, and the spotters got themselves ready. While Costner had slept, they had gone through his clothes, searching for wires, for gaffes, for spoons or boomerangs. Nothing. Now he walked straight to the chief and stared at it. Hartshorn was there.
You look tired, he said gently to Costner, studying the man's weary brown eyes.
I am, little.
Costner tried a smile. It didn't work.
I had a funny dream.
Oh?
Yeah. About a girl.
He let it die off. Hartshorn's smile was understanding, pitying, empathic, and understanding. There are lots of girls in this town. You shouldn't have any trouble finding one with your winnings. Costner nodded and slipped his first silver dollar into the slot. He pulled the handle. The reels spun with a ferocity Costner had not heard before, and suddenly everything went whipping slantwise as he felt a wrenching of pure flame in his stomach as his head was snapped on its spindly neck as the lining behind his eyes was burned out. There was a terrible shriek of tortured metal, of an express train ripping the air with its passage, of 100 small animals being gutted and torn to shreds, of incredible pain, of night winds that tore the tops off mountains of lava, and a keening whine of a voice that wailed and wailed and wailed as it went away from there in blinding light.
Free! Free! Heaven or hell, it doesn't matter! Free!
The sound of a soul released from an eternal prison, a genie freed from a dark bottle, and in that instant of damp, soundless nothingness, Costner saw the reels snap and clock down for the final time. 1, 2, 3. Blue eyes. But he would never cash his checks. The crowd screamed through one voice as he fell sidewise and lay on his face. The final loneliness. The chief was pulled. Bad luck. Too many gamblers resented its very presence in the casino. So it was pulled and returned to the company with explicit instructions it was to be melted down to slag, and not till it was in the hands of the ladle foreman who was ready to dump it into the slag furnace did anyone remark on the final tally the chief had clocked.
"Look at that. Ain't that weird?" said the ladle foreman to his bucket man. He pointed to the 3 glass windows.
"Never saw jackpot bars like that before," the bucket man agreed. 3 eyes? Must be an old machine.
"Yeah, some of these old games go way back," the foreman said,
hoisting the slot machine onto the conveyor track leading to the slag furnace.
3 eyes, huh? How about that? 3 brown eyes.
And he threw the knife switch that sent the chief down the track to the puddle in the roaring inferno of the furnace. 3 brown eyes. 3 brown eyes that looked very, very weary. That looked very, very trapped. That looked very, very betrayed. Some of these old games go way back.